celebrating the life of Broncos owner Pat Bowlen. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
We have a really quick, a special guest, Troy. I know you're busy, but Troy Rank is dropping in. He's filming Tommy for a little perspective. And I won't keep you about a second, but how is your... What kind of reaction have you gotten today as you... I'm sure you're getting perspective on Pat Bowlen through a variety of people throughout the course of the day. Oh, hold on a second. Got to turn that sucker on. There you go.
Talked to multiple players today. Just came from an interview with Coach Shanahan, and I just marvel at how the blend of competitiveness and compassion I was just talking to Tommy about. Usually when owners are hell-bent on winning, they become ruthless. And he was able to understand the nuances of ownership that it's all about winning. It's all about creating a standard. He was smart as a fox, as Coach Shanahan told me. But he didn't meddle, put people in position to succeed, and then he still showed compassion. He was the first one to call Terrell Davis after his knee injury. Tommy was just telling me how he called him and talked to him in the off season one time after a surgery. And that's what I think made him unique, is that when they were always the bridesmaid, D-Mac, he found a way to get them over the top. And so what players told me today essentially was they didn't want to let him down. They felt like he was more than an owner, that he had their back. And that's what always struck me with Mr. B. He was a pretty quiet guy. And if you didn't know him, he came across as aloof. But if you knew him and understood him, and I only did a little bit because I was a young reporter in 96, 97, 98, I could appreciate the fact that everything was about winning. He wasn't the richest guy in the world.
Right.
But where did all that money go back to? Back to the team. And he treated the Broncos as a civic institution. He created a sense of pride for this state, for the city, this state, and this region. So the reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. It's a tough day, but it's now transitioning. When I was up at 5 in the morning, it was a tough day where people were, you know, it was really difficult to kind of process. Now it's turning more into the kind of the celebration of his life.
What do you know, if anything, about services or stuff like that?
Well, they're doing the public tribute. I don't have it right in front of my phone here. The public tribute this coming week, and then there'll be a private ceremony on June 24th with Broncos executives, NFL executives. But there will be a public event, I believe, is on Tuesday.
10 to 3, Tuesday at Mile High?
Yeah, where the public can come, and there'll be memorabilia there of Pat from Pat Bowlen's career. His 35-year career as the owner of the Broncos. So that's a really nice touch. Because the fans, that's what's... I don't know that I've ever covered a team or even observed from afar fans like that follow and attach themselves to an owner. It's usually the opposite. They dislike the owner. And this situation will allow the public to go and kind of pay their last respects to Pat in their own
way. So will it be a just kind of an open thing from 10 to 3?
Correct.
No formal speeches or...
Correct.
Something like that. Just open... To pay tribute to him.
Correct.
That sort of thing.
Over a 5-hour time period where you go into the stadium, and it's in the United way, the United part of that
club level
right there.
Yeah.
So that's really nice for the fans, because that's something that allows them to kind of pay their last respects. Because that's what struck me, D-Mac, today, and I know you guys have taken calls on this. Fans felt legitimately close to Pat Bowlen, and I can say I wasn't really close to him, but they felt close to him because of the way he ran the football team. And they appreciated the way he ran the football team. And again, to have an owner that was so obsessed with winning yet didn't meddle, that is such a unique combination. Because usually when they get up that obsessed with winning, they become the GM. And then Coach Shanahan was telling me just a few minutes ago, coming from this interview, that he was obsessed with winning. He did know football, but he also knew he wasn't the GM. He respected the people he put in that position and created the expectation for him, and then got out of their way.
When you're talking to Coach Shanahan, did he ever say no to Mike? Outside of, you know, the very end of when he was fired, yes. But did he ever say no to Mike for any of the suggestions, anything that Mike had in his mind that he wanted to do, whether it was adding on to the facility or the players need this, X, Y, Z? Did he ever say no to him?
He didn't, based on the conversation I had with him. He said that when he came from the 49ers, one of the things he said to him was, I just won a Super Bowl there. They just, you know, annihilated the Chargers. The Broncos had been in Super Bowls with Pat Bowlen. You know, they'd just gotten almost to the mountaintop. And he said, I just came from the 49ers, and the way they did it there, I understand why they're ahead of us. and they have a chiropractor for the players. They have their own rooms on the road. They have basically a nutritionist before we knew what nutritionists were. And he said, and his react, Pat Bowlen's reaction was, fine, what do you need? Tell me. What do you need? You got it. And now the only thing he said kind of was when they were trying to approve the stadium was, hey, that week the vote was coming down. He told him, half jokingly, this is one of the biggest games of your career. I need you to win this game this week before the people go to the ballot box that fall. And I'm sure you felt you knew about it, right, Tommy? Yep. You were living it. But outside of a Super Bowl, maybe that was one. But he didn't sound like he said no to much in their time together that basically if he said this is why we need it, Pat was like, fine. And again, he wasn't the richest guy. He could have said no on to half of it and said, yeah, you need this, but come on. Do you really need this? And he was so obsessed with getting to the championship, to winning the championship, that he didn't allow anything to get in the way of that. And I respect that because it would have been easy for him. Even let's say they didn't win a Super Bowl. He still would be a great owner. I mean, let's say they went to 7 and lost 7. I mean, that would be an odd legacy, but they'd still be considered a great owner. How many owners go to Super Bowls? Very few. He went to 7, and they had 7 losing seasons. They didn't have back-to-back losing years under Pat Bowlen until these past 2 seasons. They haven't had 3 straight since the 70s. I mean, it's just a remarkable legacy of success.
But winning aside, I as a player, even if we hadn't won Super Bowls, I'd still look at him, even if we hadn't gone to Super Bowls, I'd still look at him as a great owner because he was, like you said, he did not meddle, and he treated me, and I never saw him treat anyone differently. John Elway did not get treated any different by Pat Bowlen than I did. We were all like equal. He was just a good, down-to-earth guy who had a lot of money.
Did it ever surprise you the competitiveness because he was a triathlete?
Right.
When you'd show up in the trainer's room and he's working harder than some of the players? Did that strike you?
He would challenge players on treadmills, whatever it was, whatever he was working out. And then he'd work out with us. Greg Supporter, one of the assistant strength coaches, used to work him out. He used to come in the weight room with like elbow pads on, like ready to go, man. The dude was competitive.
And that's the part people don't, I think, understand about Pat. He was in the Ironman 2 months before he purchased the team. He finished like 136th out of 1,100 competitors in the Ironman triathlon. I mean, this was his DNA. He really thought he was going to play football at Oklahoma under Bud, you know, the Bud Wilkinson, the Oklahoma back then.
Right.
He thought he was going to play for Oklahoma as a 150-pound receiver. That's who he was. He loved sports, and he really remained competitive, and his ownership became the vehicle for it. But I just respect the fact that he was able to be relentless in his pursuit of excellence while showing compassion to you guys as players. Because that usually doesn't happen. Usually you become, you know, essentially tangible. You just become tangible. You become fungible parts. And you move on. And every player I talk to today, they're just like, man, Mr. B meant so much to me. And like you said, Tommy, it was as if they all had kind of the same relationship with him, which is crazy to me. But it seems like they did.
Great stuff, Troy. We'll see more of your reporting on Denver 7 throughout, maybe in mere moments. You're going back to the stadium or
I'm heading to Dove Valley now. I'll be on the air at some point in the next hour or so.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for coming in. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate that. Here is Rod Smith, his reaction to Mr. B passing.
I saw him smiling, man. I'm not going to be sad all day. I'm actually watching videos and stuff of Mr. Bowlen and our organization, you know, over the years. And it brings a smile to my face, you know. And, you know, you wake up to the news. I caught it last night. And just for me, it was just tough because of knowing we finally get a chance to celebrate him. And without having him here to celebrate with us, you know, it's tough.
That's a good reaction. He started smiling. More from Rod on being part of the Super Bowls.
The thing was, it was the first, you really got to go to the Super Bowl because he started creating a culture, you know, then. The culture was being changed and altered early on. And the first Super Bowl was a fact that his changes worked. So as you got to remember, I was I didn't get drafted, but I was in the organization when Wade Phillips was the head coach. And when he hired Coach Shanahan, everything changed. Like, literally, like, the little details started to matter. The little ways were done started to matter. And, of course, you go and you, after those changes were made, it took two years, and then we win the Super Bowl. And then that's going into the second Super Bowl, like you said. Now we've established the way we want to do things as an organization. And every guy that came in then became a part of that culture.
What would you, if you were to use a word to describe the culture, what would it be?
High standards. And everything, not just the players, but the Greek, the training staff, the equipment guys. It was high standards for everybody. Accounting department.
Has that changed?
I have no idea. I'm not in the building.
We'll come back with more of your reaction at 303-713-1043. This is Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Remembering the great Broncos owner, Pat Bowlen. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
Here's Jake Plummer.
It was just one of a guy you could relate to. It wasn't, you know, he was the man. He owned the Broncos, yet he was still, you know, very easy to approach, to talk to. He was around a lot. He was in the weight room on the Stairmaster. He was in the training room checking on his players. He was in the chow hall hanging out. He was really approachable and really, first and foremost, his most important pieces of his puzzle were us players. And that really was nice to see a guy that really focused on making sure we were comfortable. We had everything we wanted and we could focus on what we needed to do, and that's to get ready to play ball the best we could play. So I'll really miss Mr. Bowlen, and my thoughts and prayers go out to the family and his close acquaintances and friends, and then everybody that, you know, has played in a Broncos uniform under his guidance when he's been the owner. I'm sure feel the loss today because he was a really remarkable man.
You know, you spend that time, Tommy, from the Super Bowls to the AFC Championship there against Pittsburgh. So you definitely spanned a gap between different generations of Broncos players. What was different or the same with Mr. B during when you were a younger player and when you were a veteran on some great teams?
There was, I did we talk about this yesterday? No, it was when I said that if the Broncos were to go 8-8, burn it to the ground, that's not what Mr. Bowlen would want. He's, you know, two losing seasons and then 8-8. My rookie year with Wade Phillips, he made a proclamation, we're going to go 19-0. That was his mindset. Now, I looked around, and I was a rookie, and I said, I don't know much about the NFL. I don't see 19-0 sitting around here. We ended up going 7-9, and Wade was showing the door. But
what did you think you guys were if you were 19-0?
Somewhere less than that.
Were you looking at anybody in particular?
I didn't see any Super Bowl champion sitting there.
Well, John Elway was there.
It seemed very dysfunctional from a practice standpoint. I mean, I came from Tom Coughlin in college, and I came to the NFL and was like, this is how practice is a run here?
Really? Did things change with Shanahan?
Things immediately.
Yeah. So that was a Wade thing.
I don't know. I didn't see 19-0, though.
Gotcha.
So expectations never changed from 94 to 2008. I mean, 2008, he fired after we were in the AFC Championship game in 2005. I think we were 9-7 in 06, okay. 7-9, 07, 8-8 in 2008, and that was the end of Mike.
Right.
Despite, you know how hard that had to have been to fire the coach that got him his first two Super Bowls.
Right. Everybody thought Mike was the coach for life.
But, and he just re-upped him the year before, his contract.
Was that the right move to fire Shanahan then?
It was stagnant. Mike didn't want to relinquish his GM type duties. Mr. Bowlen wanted Mike to go back to doing what he does best, and that's just coach football. Mm-hmm. And I just think they may have had a disagreement about the future, and the owner wins in that scenario. I think it was the right decision. I don't think Mike was doing a great job drafting players.
It was just the time. Time had run out.
Although in the NFL, nothing gets stagnant because you get new players. There's so many new players every year. So his message was always pretty fresh for the most part, because the players are all new.
What
every
think,
couple of years.
What do you think moved that forward then?
The firing?
Yeah.
It was what I just said. It was Mike wanted to maintain control over the roster.
And you think it was Pat that...
And Pat said, well, this hasn't been working great. We've missed the playoffs the last 3 years with players you're drafting. So I'd just like you to take a step back.
And when Mike refused to just take a step back...
That was it.
Well, we got to move on then.
I'd assume that was the crux of it.
Do you think Mike would have still had his job had he just said, okay, gave up the GM role?
Yeah, and Mike would have gone back to being the mastermind and developing the offense further. But he was wearing a lot of hats at the time, which is one of the reasons why Josh McDaniels came in and failed so miserably.
Right.
Is because Mike had control over everything, despite the Goodmans and Brian Zanders being there. Mike was that guy. And when Josh McDaniels came, mm-hmm. there was a void. I mean, Josh McDaniels had to do everything because that's what Mike was doing.
Interesting.
But Pat made the call.
At the end of the day.
It was the right call.
At the end of the day, it was the right call.
Yeah.
William, you're on the fan. Hi, William.
Hey, guys. So I was listening to the calls and the other sportscaster, I forget the name, he kind of called it out, but you can kind of hear it with what everyone's saying, and it's so weird to hear that everyone talk about him in a way like they actually knew him, and probably 98% of the people calling in have never even met the guy. And it's just kind of, it's interesting, and my grandpa had season tickets from 1960 on, so we've had him for almost 60 years, and some of my most memorable moments with my grandpa is calling him after every single Broncos game on every single Sunday and talking for an hour about what happened during the game. So they mean everything to me, and every time I think about the Broncos, like, I think about him. So it's kind of cool that he has that legacy, that he built something like that in this town. And it's crazy because I was born in 85, so 7 Super Bowls in the first 29 years of my life. I might not remember all of those because I was too young, but it's been an amazing ride, and what he did is just unreal, just really, really unreal. So I'm thankful that we got lucky in this town to have him. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Well, these are cool stories, you know, how sometimes somebody passes, and it makes you reflect upon yourself, your own family, and your own experiences, aside from just, you know, your day-to-day whatever you got to get through, right? So it's enjoyable to hear different reactions, different experiences that people have had.
Yeah, when
this era.
Edgar Kaiser passed away, I don't remember the old time fans that remember post 1984 talking about him at all. It's just Mr. Bolin was the Denver Broncos, and I the first call we had was that he owned the team like a fan would.
Yeah,
spend blindly and just try to win at all costs, basically. That's what fans do.
There are a couple little financial things the Broncos had to pay for later on their road to a championship.
What's that?
It circumvented the salary cap just a...
Damn right we did.
All right.
You ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
More of your reaction, 303-713-1043. Paying for everything. It's Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
In celebration of the incredible life of Broncos owner Pat Bolin. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
Here is Roger Goodell.
A very good friend, a dear friend, and somebody that I probably spoke to every day, but he cared about the Broncos in this community and always wanted to win with class and something that would make this community proud, and he did that. And he won at an extraordinary level. In 30 years, and that's a tribute to him and his drive and his competitiveness. He also, and I think people don't understand, is how much impact he had on the NFL. He was someone who was very involved on League Matters. He was a very active and powerful voice in the NFL ownership room, and many of the decisions we made over his 30 years of ownership were driven by Pat Bowman. That's the contribution. He made the game better. And frankly, I don't think the game would be as good without Pat Bowman.
Well, very specifically, Sunday Night Football. And what a juggernaut that's been. You know, there was a time everything seemed to be ruled by Monday Night Football. And now Monday Night Football is I think, considered awful, basically. You know, it's just not what it used to be. Not awful, that's too much. But, like, it really is all about Sunday Night Football.
It was Sunday Night Football was, I loved playing on it. It didn't get you off schedule. I loved watching it. I loved watching it when we had to play Monday Night Football. We'd all watch together on the road or at the local hotel here. We watched Sunday Night Football. It's fantastic. There was a void in football. You think football on Sundays, why didn't it extend on into the night?
Right.
But it was brilliant, and it worked, and I love playing on it. It was a big thing. People used to talk about Monday Night Football was that game you wanted to play on, and then Sunday Night Football came around, and that was the game. You didn't want to play on Thursday Night Football, but Sunday Night Football was the... It took over as like the premier, what players wanted to play on.
What year, boy, was that around when you started? I don't think so.
No, it was later than that. I want to say it was late 90s, maybe.
Okay. Well, he was a big part of it. He was part of the television committee, put it together with Dick Ebersol.
And more importantly,
changed the TV landscape.
That was, that's more money for the players. That's another TV deal.
Right.
Yes, a wealthy man for sure. But I remember him, or John Lynch relayed this story that Mr. Bowen told him after he signed here in Denver. He told him, he goes, it's too bad you're not a couple years younger, because in a couple years, you're going to see salaries explode. He almost felt bad for the current players because he knew what was coming down with the salary cap and things just kind of going up and up.
Big TV contracts, expanded salary caps. And we'll see another impact of that probably shortly, because in this new CBA, it seems hard to imagine there won't be an expansion, a reduction in preseason games, an expansion in the regular season.
Right. And that just means more money for the players.
And
owners, but...
Yes. And that will probably come with an expansion of roster spots. And just more money, period. The NFL isn't slowing down. It's kind of a joke. It keeps on going through all of its bumps and bruises. And it needed great leadership to steer it to that path, because there's nothing guaranteed, Tommy. Did you read the extended Seth Wickersham article about the AAF on ESPN.com?
No.
Oh, my God. Charlie Ebersol, Dick Ebersol's son, put it together with Bill Polian, and then the guy Dundon, who owns the Carolina Hurricanes, came in to try to save the day. But the amount of mistakes they made, Tom, it's absolutely stunning. So to think that just because you're playing football means you're going to have a successful product. I mean, look at how many spring leagues or other sort of offshoots have really not done anything. And I think arena football is successful in very small pockets of America. The only other level of football that's unbelievably successful, of course, is college football. But trying to get a professional league going and making it interesting, it is not easy to do. It's costly. Players get hurt. There's a lot of them, players that is. There's...
And if you don't have
if you don't have a TV contract, forget it. Forget it. You can't do it without some sort of significant TV contract. For example, the AAF, they had a barter deal with CBS. The CBS wasn't paying them. It was on barter. So you should never take it for granted the NFL was always going to be this successful. Somebody had to shepherd that through. And Mr. B was one of those guys. Sunday Night Football is fantastic. It's a great way to wrap up the weekend. Monday Night Football, to me, feels like a drag. I mean, do you really ever get excited about watching the Monday Night Football game?
Depends who's playing. There's nothing on Monday nights. I watch Monday Night Football.
I know the players hate it.
But Sunday night is better.
Yeah. Let's go to Devin. Hi, Devin. You're on the Fan.
Yeah, I'm actually calling from Edmonton. And a lot of people are talking about the influence that Pat had in Denver, but don't realize such the huge influence he had outside of Denver as well. People don't know that he's the one who built the Edmonton Coliseum in the 70s, which was absolutely, it was a complete mess at the time. And if he didn't get it done in 74, the Oilers would have never happened a couple years later, and we wouldn't have our 5 Stanley Cups. So.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the oil wouldn't be there.
No, so if we think about it, Gretzky, Messier, those dominant years of the 80s, wouldn't happen. So he has a giant influence up here as well.
Do you think the Oilers would have just, moved?
Well, the Oilers came in 79, the stadium where the Coliseum was finally built by Tony Bolin in 74, and lots of people didn't want it built. It went through a lot of different things. It almost didn't get built, so yeah.
Wow, okay, did not know that element. Thank you, Devin, appreciate it. Congratulations on your national basketball championship.
He hung up.
You hung up on him.
I swear I did not. I did not.
He did throw the 5 Stanley Cups in there, though, didn't he? Interesting. I didn't know the background in Edmonton when he was up there, or the family was up there.
He had to buy the Broncos, what was it, 70?
$71 million. Holy. I think he paid 51 and then another payment of 20.
And what's
something like that.
It's now like $2.6 billion, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Holy cow.
It was interesting, though, because there's the only negative that maybe non-fans or fans that still don't think it's right that we pitched in for the stadium was that Mr. Bolin wasn't exactly, when it came to owners, like flush with cash.
No.
There were times where our paychecks were, we'd have them, we wouldn't get paid certain players until after the season. Because
really?
He had a hard time. He had to wait for the TV money to come in all the time.
He had to wait for cash.
Right.
Right.
So that was what was so important. That's why he needed the stadium badly.
Well, let's,
financially.
Let's talk about that moment. Because that seemed to be a huge, huge tipping point in the direction for the Broncos, getting the new stadium built. It was a big deal. More of your calls at 303-713-1043. This is The Drive on the Fan.
Celebrating the life of Broncos owner, Pat Bolin. Here's The Drive with Tom Nalen and D-Mac.
To Ralph. Hey, Ralph, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey.
Hey, I was at the ball game the other day, the baseball game, and Hamels had just beamed Arenado with a bad.
Ralph, I don't need to wreck anything here, but we're just taking calls about Pat Bowl and that sort of stuff.
Well, this kind of ties into that.
Okay, all right.
It ties into it.
All right, go ahead.
I boot Hamels, and the testy Cub fan in front of me turns around and tells me I need to toughen up, and then says, what are you wearing a Broncos hat to a baseball game for?
Okay.
And before I could say anything, this big guy next to me, he just lets loose on him about how it is never inappropriate or out of fashion to wear a Broncos attire anywhere in Denver or this state, you know? And to me, it just, it set the tone, you know, that Bolin has built here in this state, that it truly is always good to have the orange and blue on. And that's what I got to say.
That's a great call. Sorry, Ralph. I didn't see where you were going there, Ralph. I thought we were going to get into bean balls. So my bad.
All right. You have a good evening.
You too. And I'll never forget, and for telling some personal stories, when, my dad had his midlife crisis and wanted to be the next Hunter Thompson, so he moved the whole family out to Steamboat. Why didn't just move us to the Aspen? I don't know. Could have, like, hung out with Hunter Thompson.
Pricier in Aspen.
1978?
Mm-hmm. At all times. Aspen?
I don't know. Wasn't the same place. But anyways, so we moved to Steamboat, third grade. Lived right next to Mount Werner, which is the name of the, you know, Steamboat Mountain. Dad wrote the book, did not get published. We moved back. But my lasting childhood memory, the number one memory I have, aside from skiing like 5 days a week, was rooting for the Denver Broncos. You know, I was in third grade. Like 9 years old.
So this is pre-Tom Brady.
This is way pre-Tom Brady. Yeah. No, I just got off, pulling for Steve Grogan. But when you're a nine-year-old kid, I just always loved sports. Always loved sports. Tommy, I thought the Denver Broncos were the most unbelievable thing. I just could not believe how much I was into the Denver Broncos. And this was the first year they went to the Super Bowl.
77, 78?
Yep. It was that year. It was the Orange Crush. And
so you got spoiled, man.
Even to this day, if I bump into, and I have over the years, like Haven Moses.
Billy Thompson.
Billy
on that team?
Yes. Yep. And he was one of my favorites. All roided up. I had no idea. And then he went to the Raiders, and I just did not understand. For a kid, it was confusing. Craig Morton. When I bump into these guys, I get giddy. Like, I get nervous still. I don't, you know. Your crew, I'm fine with. No big deal. But that 77, 78 crew was something else. Now, this is way before. Not way before, but it was before Mr. Bolin. But they got killed in that Super Bowl.
Not.
Oh, no.
It was 27-10.
They got owned. It wasn't close.
No. The Broncos fans was going, no, that was okay. Right. It was the next
Right. Relatively, it was okay. But at the time, it was heartbreaking, right? Like, you just could not believe. Yeah, it wasn't like 58-10 or something, which, right.
Did you bring that back to New England?
Like my love of the Broncos?
Did you maintain?
Yeah.
Because they were.
Yeah, I did. But it was different back then because you just couldn't see anything. Like, you know.
They did have three Super Bowls in the 80s.
I always rooted for the Broncos. I never rooted against the Broncos, ever. I always had a soft spot in my heart for them, even while I was living back in the Boston area, because of how much they meant to me when I was a little kid. But there was something always mysterious about the Broncos. Because when you're back east, the Broncos, it always seemed like the games were at night. And because it got dark, you know, in the later afternoon, and the snow, and it was ominous. And living in Steamboat, like anything happening in Denver was like, it was ridiculous. It was, you know, it's such a big city compared to like living out in, you know, Steamboat, living out in farm and ski country. The town was gaga. I mean, nobody could believe they made it to a Super Bowl then. But what was crazy is they kept going, right? And it was so disappointing. And you just had this, you know, fear in the pit of your stomach that you're going to be the Buffalo. I think everybody is terrified that their team, until they win the Super Bowl, was going to be the Buffalo Bills. And I was in Buffalo. I was in Buffalo for the final year, the fourth year. They were there. It was like, we're going to win this time. It's going to happen this time. Nope. Had the lead at halftime. But when you think about it, Tommy, if you just keep losing Super Bowls, like you said, Mr. B would have been a great owner no matter what, right? And you're right.
From our player's perspective.
You're right. But he would not have had the legacy, the championship legacy. Denver could have, sadly, kind of tailspin into another version of the Buffalo Bills.
It's funny because I didn't even. That first Super Bowl I played in I wasn't really thinking about the 0-4 prior to.
You weren't carrying all that garbage.
No.
Thank God.
Because you're focused. You're not thinking about the past.
Right.
You knew John Elway's past.
Yeah.
Because he brought with him the 0-3.
Right.
But it was more. I know it was this one was for John, but it felt like the entire city, the entire state, the region was like relieved.
Well, because we had been, I'll throw a wee in on that, had been carrying that. You know, it's, you grew up in Foxborough. Who else on the team, aside from John? Who else was relatively? Zim grew up in the woods somewhere.
Oh, Zim's from L.A.
L.A., sorry. He lives in the woods now.
He's in the woods now.
Right, sorry. Who else? TD grew up in San Diego?
Long Beach, I think.
Long Beach. Shannon grew up in the sticks in Georgia. Rod grew up in Louisiana or Missouri. Yeah. I mean, nobody was carrying that stuff. I bet you guys never talked about it.
No, because none of us were attached to it, except for John and Mr. Bolin.
Right.
That's why...
It's good that they
Mr.
didn't...
Mr. Bolin, for me, if he had said, this one is for Colorado, this one is for Denver, it would make sense to me as well.
Yeah.
But because he had the personal tie with John in the 0-for-3, and not only 0-for-3, but, I mean, 0-for-3 in...
Embarrassing.
Right. Fashion.
Right.
But if he had said, this one's for Denver...
But you know what? If he didn't change certain things along his way as an owner, I don't think you guys would have got over that hump. I really don't. I think something had to change.
What change?
Culture-wise.
I
think one of the smarter things that John said, and this was after the Broncos lost the Super Bowl, 48. And he goes, you know, there's another level. There's a level from playoffs to being in the Super Bowl to winning the Super Bowl. There's just this different level to be at. And we got to get there. And that's kind of the whole, I believe that was the whole kicking and screaming press conference. You know, we got to go down kicking and screaming, that sort of thing. Because in that Super Bowl, it was a mess. 48. Just a mess. And John knew there was, you know, another level. And I think he got that because he was around Pat Bolin. I don't know if the Bills ever got it. You know, I hear all these great stories about how everybody was treated and all that. You know, Ralph Wilson lived in Detroit. He didn't live in Buffalo. He just kind of, you know, floated in and out whenever it was convenient for him.
So players didn't know him?
No. Ralph Wilson? Nobody knew him. Things were okay there, but, you know, they trained in the stadium, so they didn't have their own training facility. Like everything just happened in the stadium itself. They had no indoor bubble. They were just victims to whatever the terrible weather was the whole season. It just was, the stadium was run down. Rich Stadium. You remember Rich Stadium?
Yeah. It's the same as Ralph Wilson, isn't it? New Era. They're all the same place.
Yeah, it's all the same place. But do you know what Rich is?
No.
Do you know what it was named after?
No.
It's not like Mr. Rich.
Care?
It's named after a non-dairy creamer. Rich Products was a non-dairy creamer company. They sponsored the stadium. I'm telling you, it was fried bologna was the most delicious, you know, meal in the stadium itself. Fried bologna. You throw a little pepper onion on it and you fry the bologna. And that is cuisine in Buffalo. No wonder the people are jumping off pickup trucks onto, folding tables in Buffalo, and that's cool.
You mentioned they're working out at the stadium. It wasn't long. It was, I think, 1990. Up until 90, the Broncos were practicing up off 58th and 25.
Yeah, that's right. Change that, right?
Right.
Can't be here anymore.
Not only
this sucks.
Did he, and I get here in 94, and the facility is, it's beautiful. But I said, every year,
it got better.
It changed.
Yeah, nothing changed in Buffalo.
But when you say that Mr. Bolin had to change or do things differently, that was only because Mike Shanahan got here from San Francisco, who had just come off a Super Bowl win, and this is how we do things there. And it just, I think he was open to anything.
Right.
Like Dan Reeves said, he's kind of open to anything that would improve. If you have a suggestion, he'll think about it. And if it makes sense, he'll do it.
All right, let's talk about the stadium vote. What was that like as a player?
Again, this was pre-internets for the most part. So everything you read was in the paper. So you didn't really know how people felt about it. I know now how people feel about it because people can now tell you how they felt back in the late 90s when the vote was being held.
Well, we've definitely established Pat Bowlen, the world of billionaires wasn't one of them
at
the time.
People think he's a billionaire. The team is worth $2.6 billion. I think that's the latest Forbes number. It doesn't, he's not like, when they sell the team, they'll be billionaires. It's weird when you think about that. He was just basically, he would spend so much money on the team updating things that when it came time to pay payroll, sometimes he didn't have any cash. He deferred. I had a year's salary deferred until after the season.
Wow.
Because the TV money had not come in yet, and he ran out.
How did they approach you about that?
Well, I think they paid more than the contract said. I think that was part of the circumventing the cap hole thing as well.
Gotcha.
I may have been a part of that. I did not know.
Gotcha.
So that's why, yes, I think a lot of fans or taxpayers and voters were mad that he kind of leveraged the whole, I'll take the team to L.A.
Yeah, he didn't have much of a choice, though. It's not like
I think it was just a bluff. But he needed that stadium because Denver ran Mile High. Mile High was, he had nothing to do with Mile High.
Right.
We just played there. So he needed the stadium for money so he can continue on. It was, you see in college football, all these to attract the high school kids, you have to keep building and building. It's like this arms race in college football.
Right.
He felt the same way, but it wasn't to attract free agents. I mean, in draft picks, you draft. It was for money because he was pretty cash poor as far as owners go.
Mm-hmm.
So how
so that mattered?
The vote was.
It's a big deal.
Big deal. And this was just to extend the tax that was continuing from Coors Field and rolled into Mile High.
Now, I think people are fans. Citizens of Colorado are well within their rights to say, hey, buddy.
Exactly.
You want to build that for your fun and games?
Pay for it yourself.
That's right.
You're a billionaire.
Or at least you're walking around like one. You figure it out. And I would not blame one soul for thinking that way. I don't think Stan Kroenke's looking for public funds.
No, because people will say,
funds.
Can we not? There's plenty of better places to use these tax dollars.
Yeah.
With schools and infrastructure and RTD. And I think T-Rex is going on at the time or just starting up.
But what we've seen is if you don't build it at some point, you become the Los Angeles Chargers.
Unless you're flush with cash. Because the Chiefs,
The
Chiefs have, that stadium was built in, I think, 71.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still, they've done some changes to it, but they didn't need to build a new stadium. But Mr. Bowlen needed the money.
So when that was going through, what did you vote for it?
I don't know if I could. I was living in Douglas County. I'm not sure I was a part of the stadium district.
Oh, it wasn't a state initiative?
I don't know. I'm sure I voted for it, though. I mean, I didn't want to move. I was falling for it, too. I go, I don't want to live in L.A.
The LA Broncos? Yeah.
You see any Broncos, wild horses running around in L.A.? I played a game in L.A., or two games. We played the Rams.
How was it?
And the Raiders. I did not want to play in L.A.
It's KKFN, KKFN HD1, Longmont, Denver. Your reaction, 303-713-1043. Adrian, you're on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Hey.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I was in San Francisco attending a Bronco game, and before the game I saw Mr. Bowlen on the field. I was in kind of an upper part of the stadium. I wanted to get his autograph, say hello. He kind of waved and said, oh, in maybe just a moment, and he walked back into the stadium. I managed to get to a lower part of the stadium, closer to kind of the locker room area, and I noticed Mr. Bowlen kind of came back out onto the field, and he was looking up in the direction where I was in order to get my attention, but I had already made it down closer, you know, where I could see him. And he saw me. He came over. He signed an autograph. He showed me one of the Super Bowl rings he was wearing. And he was just very sweet. And it was just a really nice thing to do. He didn't have to go out of his way to, like, you know, try to find me from where I was kind of waving to him.
What did you do with your owner autograph? Like, what do you do with that?
I had a mini Bronco helmet, and he signed it for me.
Okay.
So I still have it kind of on display.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
It was just really nice of him to do that.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. It would never have occurred to me growing up to get an owner's autograph.
No, that's why I just chuckled a little bit. Like, whoa, I mean, what exactly are you doing with your owner autograph? I was like,
but
I wouldn't even think of it.
I think people identified with Mr. Bowen as not a player, but
yeah.
I don't know who owns any of the teams.
Hey.
Growing up,
look at this Victor Kiam autograph I got.
No idea who that was.
Let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the fan.
Hello.
Hey. What's up?
How's it going?
All right.
Awesome. Well, I just want to say I'm almost 45 years old. I've been a Broncos fan since my dad could keep me still enough on the couch next to him holding the bowl of popcorn.
Hey, by the way, Jeff, you're 45, right? Pat Bowlen bought the Broncos when he was 42.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm not winning in life.
I just want to put your life in some perspective. That's all.
Thank you so much for that.
You got it.
But, you know, I've been through the 80s. We always had the Super Bowls. You know, the true fans been through all that. And we always felt like we were in it. And I think that's because of Pat Bowlen. And I wanted to tell you a story about my brother-in-law was graduating high school. And you have to understand, this is a town 20 miles from Kansas, one paved road, 12 graduates. And Brittany Bowlen gave the commencement speech.
Oh.
And, yeah. And, you know, I'm just there thinking I'm trying to appease my wife. And I got to witness this speech about her father and success. And you have to understand, like, 90% of that class has just taken over the family farm. So, and she just spoke, and I just remember thinking she took time out of her schedule to come down there, and it was an awesome speech. And that just speaks to the every man that Pat Bowlen was, and I think it speaks to how his family is. And that's why we feel connected to that guy, because she took her time. And I got to tell you, that was a great speech. And, I feel like any Bowlen children that take over this team, we're winning. Because I think he did a great job in life. I think he did a great job with his children. And it's inspiring.
Appreciate the call, Jeff. Here is Brittany from, I think this is back in the around the Super Bowl. And here is she talking about the Canton ceremony.
Is there any way you can envision how you're going to feel when your father's bust is unveiled and the whole world really gets to soak in the impact that he had on this game?
Our dad always told us to live in the moment, to have fun and let yourself feel all the emotions. And I'm not sure how I'll feel in that moment, but I know that it will be an incredibly humbling moment to know that my dad is with all of these legends going into the class of 2019.
Well said. Cry and shame that it didn't happen earlier.
I'd be shocked if less than 90% of Bronco fans didn't want the team to remain with the Bowlen family. Because there's only one Mr. Bowlen, but the children grew up around him and knew what the team meant and knew his standards for the team. Because you could get a new ownership group to come in and have a completely different... I'm telling you, dude, there are NFL owners that are okay losing because they're getting the TV revenue and they're getting the gate and the parking and all that, and they're fine with that. Mr. Bowlen wasn't like that, and I think the children know that. So I'd be a little nervous about anyone other than someone with the last name Bowlen owning the team and expecting this continued... I say continued. I know there's two losing seasons right now, but the continued excellence that has been a part of the team since the mid-80s.
Well, it seems that it's going in that direction. The crazy truth is there's this real interesting tipping point going on right now where it could go to one of the adult Bowlen children. Say it goes to Brittany, who's only 29, and goes to her in a couple of years. She's 31, 32, something like that, which is very similar to the age Dan Snyder was, by the way, when he took over the Redskins. So it's not like there hasn't been young owners in the NFL. There's precedent for it. If it goes in that direction, then, you know, through just passing it down to other family members, there's no reason the Broncos wouldn't stay in the Bolin family for 100 years. I don't know, forever.
Right, and it would be imperative for Brittany, whoever's owning the team, to continue, because it can get watered down. It's these grandkids and great-grandkids aren't going to know Mr. Bolin from...
Well, you got to keep the legacy going.
Right.
You know, there's an axiom in business. It's the third generation that ruins the family business for whatever reason. Like, you know, somebody starts it from nothing. That's grandpa, right?
Well, I don't think you can ruin an NFL team. I mean, there's...
You can lose.
You can lose.
You can make bad decisions that lead to losing.
But you can still make money.
Well, yeah.
But
I don't know how you can't make money in the NFL.
I think he set a standard.
But here's the tricky part, real quick. It could be in the Bolin family, seriously, for 100 years, forever. Or in the next couple of years, it could get sold. We're here. We're at this interesting crossroads right now where we'll see what happens. It is almost impossible for me to imagine, though, that Mr. B would want anything else but his family to keep owning the team. It just doesn't, even if it's not perfect at first, even if there's bumps in the road at certain points, it's just so hard for me to believe that he really would think the best interest of the team is to be sold to somebody else.
Right. Because I think he knows, or he knew that what he created, he set a standard. He knows that his children were around that standard for a long time, especially his older kids.
Yeah.
That they know, you said bumps in the road. If it were to go to one of his children and they know what he stood for, bumps in the road. I mean, to continue trying to be the best team, to continue investing
their father's legacy,
continue investing in the team.
Mm-hmm.
I could see it being a smooth transition if the right child is selected.
You know, the funny part is...
The problem with Brittany is that she's 29.
Yeah.
Mr. Bolin has been... everything you read 2014, he stepped away. But for the most part, it's been 10-plus years. So she was in her teens when he was truly... at the end of his true ownership of the team.
True.
So how much did she get out of that? Does she remember what the team was meaning to him at that point?
Well, she was living her own life. You know, she went to Notre Dame, and then she did work for the team for a bit, and then she went to Duke and now McKinsey. I don't know. I mean, I think so. I think so. But you can make that same argument for Amy, the oldest, or Beth. Or the other kids too, Patrick, John.
Well, they were much older.
Much older. The only people that seem to be just so young it seems impossible is Christiana and Annabelle, who are literally like 10, 11 years old at that time and are still in their young 20s. I mean, I wouldn't put that on anybody at that age. It's ridiculous. But the oldest grandchild of Pat Bolin isn't that much younger than his youngest daughter. I mean, the family is spread out. So there'll be plenty of grandchildren and other family members. There's seven kids. There'll be plenty of heirs to the throne as time goes on. There's no reason why there wouldn't be a long line of succession.
It's not about the heirs. I know there's plenty of options as to heirs and future heirs. It's how they run the team, like their dad or grandfather would have.
Well, you would think that legacy would just get passed down from generation to generation. You would think that
this is what I'm talking about with Brittany. Was she around enough to understand what her dad did as the owner of the team?
It's a good question.
It's easier just to, you know, I'm the owner now. There's TV money and I have 53 guys in the roster and I own the team.
Well, the
as opposed to giving head coach, giving the GM, just staying out of their way as far as that go, hiring the right people.
Yeah.
But also investing in the team, investing in the stadium.
Yeah, when you think about it, Pat Boland.
Because it can go from first rate to second rate real quick.
Yeah, he didn't fire Dan Reeves. He kept Dan Reeves. We'll actually hear from Dan Reeves here in a little bit. So, but then he moved on from him to Wade Phillips, who he just, you know, wasn't really going to be here for a long time, to finally the guy he really wanted, Mike Shanahan. Well, to really have that faith in Mike Shanahan, it took a lot of years, right? It didn't happen overnight with Pat Boland. It's not like Pat Boland bought the team and you know, immediately hired Mike Shanahan and they were wildly successful just out of thin air.
No, he needed Dan Reeves.
Now, what was absolutely critically important to the success of the team was John Elway. I mean, having John Elway was just massively, critically, undeniably the most important piece of the puzzle. That's what he inherited. That's what he needed. Got a little bit lucky there, right? I mean, that John worked out. Like, John was right. Everything.
It was only after John's rookie year.
Right. John was only his second year.
He bought the team.
Yeah. So you got to hope that the guy's not a bust. That and John was. He was everything you could have possibly hoped.
Yeah, but he was banking on Elway working out.
Yeah. Yes. But having that guy, oh my gosh, it means so much. Having Peyton Manning was unbelievable. But we always knew it was going to be for a short period of time. What you really want is
But even the in-between, from 99 to 2012, or 2010-ish,
okay.
there still was, his standard was there, regardless of who the quarterback was. Maybe he didn't have quite the roster he'd wanted, but he was, again, always, you know, 2 years with a coach, gave him a shot, a legit shot, didn't work out. I mean, you may say that Wade Phillips was a placeholder for Mike Shanahan, but had Wade was, I think, 9-7 in 93.
Mm-hmm.
Had Wade had a 19-0 season, like Mr. Boland thought.
Wade's last year was 8-8, wasn't it?
7-9.
His last year was 7-9?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was 9-7, 7-9.
Okay.
Something like that.
So he had a .500 record as a coach.
Right.
I mean, what would have VJ given for that?
But had...
That's a high standard, by the way, isn't it? When you think about it. You had a .500 record over 2 years as a coach and you're out?
And he was out well before the end of that year. I mean, we heard in the locker room, Schefter was covering the team at the time for Rocky Mountain News, maybe late October, early November. We started off 0-4.
So you started hearing some weird questions.
We already knew. Because Mr. Boland, this is before the 49ers had won the Super Bowl.
What were some tip-off questions from Shefty?
No, he would say, it wasn't questions. It was...
He would just tell you?
He would just kind of, you'd hear whispers. And Adam was well-connected back in Denver back then. But there's just a nice, even though we weren't winning Super Bowls, we didn't have that franchise quarterback, the standard never deviated.
But it could have got better. And it did get better.
On the field?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you got Peyton Manning.
Well, I'm talking about when you got rid of Wade and Mike came in.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm saying from after John retired to Peyton Manning.
After that.
The standard did not change.
Right.
The facility, he dumped money into the facility year after year after year.
Yeah, some things just didn't work out. Greasy.
This isn't a guy that's not going to spend up to the cap.
Greasy didn't.
The cap floor was not invented for Pat Boland. It was invented for the Bidwells and other owners.
Right.
Forced them to spend money.
Let's go to Robin. Hi, Robin. You're on the Fan.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, I just wanted to say that somehow I know that Mr. Boland is going to be present during his Hall of Fame introduction, and that brings me comfort. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
It's, he wasn't going to be physically there regardless, but it'll be a cool moment. His kids will be happy.
Sean, you're on the Fan. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys, how you guys doing? I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. What's up?
So I wanted to explain a very passionate part of my life that I had with Mr. B.
Okay,
so
go ahead.
When I'm 32 years old now. This is going to be on his 35th wedding anniversary with Mrs. B. And I had the opportunity to play golf with him and one of the sons and another of our buddies at Cherry Hills. Mm. And this was a very kind of life kind of lesson moment that I got from him. As you guys have always said, you know, how quiet he is. So it was an April day and we're at Cherry Hills and we're on the putting green. And I was a younger golf pro at the time in my early 20s. And I was complaining to Mr. B's son about the weather, the wind, the coolness of the day in April. And Mr. B had heard me saying this and he goes to me, he goes, "Hey Sean, come here." I go, "Okay." So I come over and we're staring at the mountains at Cherry Hills on the putting green. He goes, "Sean, you see those mountains?" I go, "Yes, sir." He goes, "You see this beautiful golf course?" I go, "Yes, sir." He goes, "We have no time to be complaining about the weather today." and as a young kid, and I hope this reaches out to other kids as well, you know, people that don't really experience life, that it's not about what we complain about. It's what we have. And as honest of a man as he was that I knew he was, that was my life lesson that I learned from Pat Bowlen that day on his 35th wedding anniversary with Mrs. B. And I got the opportunity to play golf with him and his son and just enjoy the day with them. And it was the most amazing experience I ever had.
Well, thank you, Sean.
I don't think he lost sight of the fact that he was an owner of an NFL team. I think he probably loved every day. That's why I think he had 65 great years.
Yeah, this comes from a piece back in the 80s, Ryan Green from Channel 4.
I didn't get involved or buy the majority interest of this ball club because I needed a hobby. I wanted to make it into a career. It's not what a financial man would say a good investment, but it's a good investment for me, and because that's personally what I want to do. I'm not just interested in making money anymore. I'm interested in making myself happy in the job that I'm doing. But I didn't buy it so that I could go to the games on Sunday and sit in the owner's box. I got involved with the Denver Broncos because I feel that I want to be very active in the day-to-day administration of this football team.
What are your feelings going to be the first time you're sitting in Mile High Stadium, the team takes the field, and you say, "Hey, that's my football team"?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm going to be probably the most excited guy in the world at that point in time. Obviously, you know, that's what I'm here for.
A new, almost like being a new papa.
Almost like being a new papa or being, you know, having a dream come true.
Funny he mentions I want to be a part day-to-day operations of the team, and he was the business side of things extremely active.
Sure.
But I mean,
you gotta sell advertising and stuff, you still gotta do work.
You gotta do TV, and that's why he got into the TV negotiations.
Yeah.
He was on many committees, yep. But those are all apart from running the team, the actual football side of it. He stayed to his side of it.
Yeah, he liked to check in with Greek every day.
He tried to hire the best guys possible.
Yeah.
And a guy like Greek, I mean, he found a guy he trusted and kept him there. I mean, Greek was prior to Mr. Bowlen. So Mr. Bowlen, like Dan Reeves, you get a new owner in there and you're thinking, well, the new owner is going to bring his own people.
You know, to a certain degree, being an owner is not that difficult if you hire great people and let them do their jobs.
Yeah, that's the difficult part.
Is hiring to hire great people.
Troy Rank was talking about how he's an extremely competitive man with his triathlons, with wanting to win, and being a wealthy guy, you'd think, get out of the way, I'll do it. And he never got the itch to truly meddle with the team.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw it in the 15 years I was there. There was never a thing, Mr. Bowlen wants to do it. Mr. Bowlen wants a new GM. Mr. Bolin, it was never like that. Well, he would hire. Mike kind of had carte blanche and whatever he could do.
And that became just a little too much.
Well, Mr. Bolin hired the right man.
Yeah. Here's Shanahan talking about his approach to working with Pat.
Well, like I said, you know, when you're there as an assistant coach and you go through, you know, years and years of, you know, your goals, and that's to win and to win a championship, until you actually do it, you know there's an empty feeling inside of you. And what you want to be able to do is kind of not just get there, but do something special. And I think that's why John was so strong, you know, when he did win, that he says, hey, you know, you have to have it from the top. Obviously, you got to have great, you know, great teammates. You got to have a great team. But it starts up front where you got a great leader that has a vision, has a standard. He wants to do business the right way. And John could see that. And so I can't say enough great things about him because he was such a special man.
We'll hear from Dan Reeves coming up next.